So Make Money Mondays, it's the part of the show, and she needs to be briefed on this, does Magda Wyszycka, our guest this evening, as to what she's doing here. But it is about attitudes towards money and what informs your attitude towards money. And Magda has been a shapeshifter on The Money Show before, so we've heard the story. And you can find the podcast, if you look hard enough, about her her childhood growing up in Poland. She then spent time as a 13-year-old in a refugee camp. A man in the bunk above her had gangrenous feet. I mean, she's had an experience that she never wants to go through again. And she's been an outspoken critic of corporate malfeasance. She's been a big critic and of the state capture project, and somebody who has put her neck on the line, frankly, in terms of being quite unequivocal about what is and is not ethically and legally acceptable in South Africa. And she is in studio with us this evening.
Hi, Bruce.
I mean, you're reputed to be the richest woman in South Africa, are you?
On paper.
On paper.
On paper, and you can't eat paper. Unfortunately, there's a big difference.
But you mean you've worked in the asset management industry for decades. You worked at Coronation, and you've worked at African Harvest, and you spent some time at Alexander Forbes. And now you are a big shareholder in Signia, which is listed on the JSE,
indeed,
which is an asset management company. What's your earliest memory of money? I mean, your mom and dad were both doctors, if memory serves.
Indeed.
And so
indeed,
you must have had a comfortable childhood in Poland or
well,
not?
You know, in Poland, in the communist era, it didn't matter whether you were a coal miner or whether you were a medical doctor. Everyone had exactly the same, which wasn't very much. So that was the very premise of communism. But, you know, you didn't know about unhappiness because you didn't know about things you didn't have.
True.
So actually it was quite a happy childhood up until that was ripped.
Yes. And then
from under me.
And then you go into a refugee camp when you
indeed
go from having nothing to having absolutely nothing. And that
indeed
is your sort of, I suppose, Damascene moment in terms of making a decision then to go, we're not doing this again. Ever.
I think it was a very traumatic moment because, you know, simply because my parents didn't tell me that that's what we're doing. So we left behind absolutely everything, you know, every toy, every doll I ever had, my favorite pair of red shoes. We arrived in Austria with two suitcases and absolutely nothing else. But, you know, certainly it makes me pause right now when, you know, all South Africans are thinking about possibly emigrating, possibly moving. And, you know, it's not an easy decision to make. It's not an easy life if you move, and do not underestimate the impact on your children, because the impact on your children is actually horrendous, of literally taking them out of the environment they know, away from their friends, away from, you know, everything that they've grown up with. And there are scars that you have for the rest of your life as a consequence of that.
I mean, when you look at Poland, and Poland is a remarkable country in the last 20 years. They've had unbroken economic growth for 20 years. It's been a remarkable economic success story. South African concepts have gone. Some have succeeded and some have failed. Techie Town's done well, I think, in Poland. And Steinhoff.
SAB as well.
SAB did remarkably well in Poland. But I mean, when you look back at it, you go, oh, if only that sort of stuck it out another 5 years, we would have been okay in Poland.
You know, I don't know. Look, the Poles are very industrious and they very adaptable. They work really hard and it's a highly educated population. So the one legacy of communism is the fact that everyone got very good education. And, you know, I guess if I had been there now, look, I would still suffer under the political system that is there now, because as much as we have our crazy in South Africa, trust me, Poland is not far off.
It has its own share of crazy, yes.
It is not far off.
But at least they have growth.
But they have growth. But
yes,
you know, that growth might very well come to an end. Look, the Poles are very, very good at exploiting the system. And once they joined the EU, they certainly lived off those subsidies like you wouldn't believe. They built roads, they built bridges, they built infrastructure. So Poland certainly knew how to feed off the system to their own benefit. But I think, you know, tough times are coming for Europe. So
yes,
they're not going to escape those times either.
We've spoken many times about the state of the nation, the state of corporate South Africa, the state of the KPMGs and the roles of the trillions and the roles of, and you're not a big fan of Iqbal's survey, and we know those. I mean, you've not had your day in court yet, have you? Because you're being sued.
I'm not being sued.
Oh.
He's never sued anybody in his life. And I'm suing him.
Oh, wasn't he going to sue you too? Wasn't he a tat spat of, you sue me, I'll sue you
back. For billions. No, I'm still waiting for those court papers to be delivered. But in the meantime, I am suing independent media and him in two different court cases. So I actually put my money where my mouth is. I don't think he does.
Is it going to be worthwhile, do you think? Is it a worthwhile process? I mean, Trevor Manuel got a worthwhile judgment against the EFF. They're appealing that particular judgment. Defamation doesn't pay vast amounts of money in terms of settlements. You're not doing this to add to the coffers.
No, gosh, absolutely not. You know, defamation costs you more than you win. And if I win anything, I'm going to donate it back to GEPF, which he's stripping back. But the issue for me was more one of, can I get him on the stand in a court of law testifying? Because that would be a real coup. Having said that, I think that, because, you know, I'm not that interested in defamation, I couldn't care less. But I would love to see him in a court of law testifying under oath. I mean, we have seen him testifying under oath at the PIC Commission of Inquiry, and that was, let's say, an interesting experience, contradicted by every single testimony that came thereafter. So I thought, you know, at the time I sued him, that potentially that is, you know, one avenue for getting him into a court of law.
What motivates you? I mean, what gets you? Because you take almost a personal offense at public malfeasance.
Bruce, I don't know. You know, I once was interviewed by an industrial psychologist, and, you know, he said to me that he thinks what drives me and the very unusual decisions that I tend to make is driven by my non-linear childhood. So I guess...
Disrupted childhood, in other
words. Disrupted childhood, maybe the fact that, you know, those kind of early years in South Africa were not pleasant by any stretch of the imagination. You know, so we had no money to answer your money questions, absolutely none.
But you arrive in South Africa with those two suitcases, or maybe you had an extra
And 500 rand. And 500 rand in the bag. So let's not forget that money.
Yeah, but I mean, and so a really tough childhood. And that must motivate you as somebody who very, very strong academic ability to go to UCT, where you went, and to work harder than you've ever worked in your life.
Indeed. But it also annoys me to see how much potential this country has and how much of that potential is being wasted right now. Imagine what we could actually do with this country if we had a proper education system, if we actually
spend 23% of our national budget on education. It's there. The money is there to be spent. And it is spent, just not appropriately.
And, you know, there are so many different things that we could do if we had competent people in government who were appointed on the back of meritocracy, just in those few key positions, education being one of them.
We replayed an interview that we did, Jonathan Janssen's interview from about a year ago last week. And a year ago, I said to him, if you were offered the job of education minister, would you take it? And he went, yes, I would. And the incumbent is dreadful and she can't do her job. And we've seen Angie Motshekga reappointed as minister of basic education.
Indeed. Indeed. And it just saddens me to see it. And I guess, you know, what drives me now is, you know, trying to make a difference in whatever small way I can. Mm. And it's certainly not going to be by focusing on myself and, you know, doing things for myself. So, you know, I think that as much as I've had a tough childhood and, you know, I can have a bit of a sob story around that, I also have been incredibly lucky in life. And, you know, I have worked
hard. Lucky or motivated?
Both. Mm. I think that, you know, a lot of people work really hard. A lot of people are really, really smart. And yet you do need lady luck to smile on you. And I think I've had my fair share of luck.
What was the luckiest moment? What was the lucky catalyst from a financial point of view in your career?
The luckiest catalyst, actually, for a variety of different reasons, was meeting one of the most controversial characters in South Africa by the name of Mzi Khumalo.
Uh-huh.
So Mzi spent 13 years on Robben Island at the same time as Nelson Mandela. And when he came off Robben Island, he was determined to make money. And he's a very, very complex character and not what media portrays him to be.
But he was a guy who also grew up with nothing. He was a petrol pump attendant in his youth.
Indeed.
And then got involved in politics, got himself locked up and came out of jail probably in his 40s.
Indeed.
Yeah.
With UNISA education and determined to make money in business. And he did it in a very clever way. So it was through some clever transactions and then there were some stupid transactions. And then he bought this bankrupt company called African Harvest. And only did due diligence on that company after he bought it, not before he bought it. Complete disaster. It was actually being liquidated when he bought it. And then he needed to find somebody to run it who wouldn't ask too many questions. And I was 32 and stupid. Since then,
you've learned to ask questions.
I've learned to ask the right questions. But actually meeting him was very much of a pivotal point because it exposed me to a couple of things. I mean, never mind, I had to run African Harvest and fix it. And, you know, I did manage to do that. And I managed to at least create an asset base, which then allowed me to launch Signia. But more importantly, he exposed me to the politics of this country. He taught me about the history of ANC. He told me about Robben Island. You know, all these things that in many ways we are actually completely oblivious to. He told me a lot about Zuma. He told me a lot about Mandela. You know, stories that probably shouldn't find their way into public arena. But it was an education. And, you know, he's a great person. He lives in London now because Zuma kind of drove him out of South Africa. He comes back quite frequently. But, you know, he really has been a pivotal figure in my life.
Magda Wyszycka, has she got any bad money habits, I wonder? Does she have any small Inyana skeletons of her own? Does she have any expensive habits, I wonder? We'll get to those questions in a moment. So Magda Wyszycka has, over a career in financial services, built on paper an extraordinary empire. But growing up in communist Poland, the same as everybody else, coming to South Africa with 500 rand in the family bank account and two suitcases worth of stuff after spending a year in a refugee camp in Austria, life was tough and she went off to UCT. Did you get a bursary to get to UCT?
Yes, indeed.
Did you take a loan?
No, I had a bursary. I mean, you know, I studied actuarial science, but only because I didn't really know what actuarial science was, but it was the only course that was offering fully-fledged bursaries. So now it was a bursary.
And it was complicated enough so you could do it.
And it was really boring and really complicated, but I had some good friends who kind of helped me through it.
Dragged you through it. Are you an investor yourself? Do you buy your own products? Do you put money into Signia funds? How do you invest?
I only invest in Signia products and I only invest in passive products. So, I'm one of those investors who puts money away and forgets about it. So the idea is that, you know, since I was 24 years old, started working, 20% of my salary is put away as part of my, you know, retirement savings.
That tragically is not normal. I mean, the vast majority of South Africans could never dream one of putting away 20%, and certainly not putting away 20% from the age of 24, which is the right thing to do, but very few of us ever do that.
You know, I always thought of my salary as being 80% of what it actually ever was. So I never thought of that 20% as existing. I mean, I'm actually so bad that I've never looked at my benefit statements to find out how much that pot of savings is worth. And it's actually worth quite a lot of money these days because of the effect of compound interest. Mm. But right from the age of 24, 20% of my salary went into my retirement fund, and it was very much invest and forget. And obviously, when I started Signia, you know, I'm a very firm believer that, you know, the only thing in life that you can control as far as saving and investing is concerned are the costs and the fees that you pay. You can't control the markets. You can't control, you know, how your asset manager performs or not. But you can control how much you pay for the experience. So, guided by that, that's very much Signia's philosophy, lowest cost savings. And I just invest in Signia index tracking funds and don't think about it too much.
Do you spend a lot of money? Do you like spending money? Is money a nice thing to have?
You know, I don't actually think about money. So as much as, you know, Signia on paper is worth a lot of money, that doesn't necessarily translate into cash in the bank account. And like every other South African, I live on debt, which is a terrible thing to admit.
Do you?
Yes. Bruce, if you actually look at my cash save, you know, salary since, so, you know, my career has these few stages to it, you know, the coronation days when I was earning and kind of trying to build up and establish myself. Then African Harvest, where I wasn't earning much of a salary, I was building up a company. I walked away with, you know, quite a large lump sum of money at the end of that when we sold African Harvest. But then I reinvested all of it into building Signia.
Yeah.
And again, for a few years, I didn't take a salary out of Signia while building up the company. And now I take a very modest salary out of Signia. So the difference between, you know, paper wealth and cash flow wealth is quite material. So then to fund your lifestyle, you have to know some friendly bankers and then manage your finances accordingly.
It's so nice to know that you're a real South African. You know, you're completely committed. You're so committed that you even live like the rest of us. You live on debt. Do you have bad money habits? Do you like expensive things?
You know what? I like nice clothes, certainly. I hate the experience of shopping. I actually am not a shopper, so I really love online shopping.
I have been on an aeroplane where you've been sitting in the pointy bit of the aeroplane,
so,
and I was walking past.
I'm so embarrassed.
And you're on your iPad flicking through outfits. Is that your shopping?
That's my shopping. I mean, you actually encountered me shopping. I'm really embarrassed. But, you know, I don't think I've got huge, I don't think about money that often. Mm. You know, I actually have this kind of attitude that, you know, coming from where I've come from, I don't have a huge attachment to material possessions. So the one thing I always wanted to do is give my kids an amazing education. That was kind of, you know, primary goal. But frankly, in terms of my life, you know, I always talk about the fact that, you know, we've now sold our house. We live in an apartment. I'm very happy in an apartment. I'm an apartment dweller. Having grown up in 60 square meters.
Exactly, 60 square meters in a four-story block, yes.
It's now a little bit bigger, but nonetheless, it's an apartment. But, you know, when you think of an average person, when I'm alone at home and I come home from work late in the evening, frankly, you know, I go to the kitchen, I go to the bathroom, I go to my bedroom, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, if I walk 30 square meters, I would be surprised.
I think it's a Warren Buffett quote saying, you know, wear one pair of pants at a time.
I know. Well, that's exactly the point. So actually, money is a great enabler. And my great pleasure in life has been travel.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have been to every corner of the globe, from Antarctica to Galapagos Islands Arctic. Antarctica. By far.
What is it? I mean, I saw a piece of footage on Twitter today of a boat going through the Southern Ocean. I mean, there's no way you get me within a million miles of that. The ocean is breaking over the bow of the ship. It's
rough.
Terrifying.
Okay, there are 2 days where you have to cross, and literally you don't get up from your bunk, and you're never too far away from a bucket. But once you have suffered through that, and you know, you get to the other side, it is just astonishing. You know, you've got glaciers which are sky blue like your tie. Yeah. You have penguins everywhere. You've got absolute pristine territory. It's you know, breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking.
And you like art.
And I like art. So I've always liked colorful environments. So if you walk into Signia's offices, you know, we have a lot of very eclectic pop art, but it's happy art.
Mm.
So that's the one thing. You know, we don't buy anything complex or moody or complicated. It's meant to make people laugh and smile and be cheerful.
Have you ever wasted money in your life?
Bitcoin.
You didn't.
Bitcoin.
What did you do with Bitcoin? Confession time. This is your skeleton.
God, that is the biggest skeleton. My husband has not forgiven me to this date. So I bought my first Bitcoin at $4,000, my last Bitcoin at $18,000, and watched it plummet literally the week after. And I was completely caught up in, you know, the tulip mania. I completely bought into the story that this is the digital gold, digital store of value.
It may still be.
I don't care.
Have you lost faith?
I don't care what it is. I have lost so much money. I trust nothing any longer. I'm back to index tracking funds and nothing else.
Magda Wyszyńska, lovely story to end with. Thank you very much for coming in. Magda Wyszyńska is the founder and chief executive at Signia.